Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
I'm joined by Crispin Boyer, who's out with his new book for middle grade children, Zeus the Mighty, The Maze of the Menacing Minotaur. This is the second book in his Zeus the Mighty series, which reimagines Greek mythology for modern times for children. Crispin, I've never had you on before for this series. Who is Zeus?
Zeus is a hamster who lives in a pet rescue center in Athens, Georgia, but he actually believes that he is Zeus, the king of the Greek gods.
So this isn't a deal where the characters know that they are fake. They actually believe they're Greek gods. So set it up for us. You have all kinds of different characters with different Greek gods' names and locations on Olympus and everything in there. So kind of set this up for us.
Sure, yeah, happy to. So, yeah, that, you're exactly right. It's not that these animals pretend that they're Greek gods. They actually believe they are the Greek gods. And this Mount Olympus Pet Rescue Center is actually ancient Greece. So you have Zeus, who's, you know, he's a little hamster. He's got a big ego. He leads the other Olympian gods from his palace on Mount Olympus, which is actually his cage, his little habitat at the highest shelf in the Pet Rescue Center. So, you know, this is the point of this series is to kind of teach kids about Greek mythology without actually hitting them over the head with it. So you have Athena the cat. She's the goddess of wisdom, and she's, you know, she's very very smart and wise, and also very mechanical. She figures out how to turn the shop's robot vacuum into a vessel that they can travel around the Greece in, and it's called the Argo. You've got Ares, who's a pug. He's a little kind of force of chaos, just like Ares from Greek mythology. You have Demeter, who's the goddess of the harvest, and that is a grasshopper who is Zeus's best friend, and she basically keeps him out of trouble. And then you have Poseidon, who is a pufferfish. He lives in the Aegean Sea, but it's actually just the aquarium section, and he travels with the animals by rolling around in a little dive helmet that's filled with water that's attached back to the tank. So, yeah, so they go around the pet center at night when the owner, who's her name is Artie, when she goes home, and they go on adventures every night, and each kind of adventure is based off a different episode or, you know, from Greek mythology.
This particular story is based on Theseus and the Minotaur. What was that Greek tale, just briefly, so that you adapted?
Sure. So you had this evil king named Minos who had a maze built beneath Crete, and in the center of this maze was the Minotaur. Minotaur, I've heard it pronounced many different ways by different experts. And so he, you know, the actual mythological story is actually very scary because he would demand the tributes from various town city-states around him, would send their young children into the maze to then be devoured by the Minotaur. Now, of course, that's highly inappropriate for a kid's story, but with, you know, with Zeus, we kind of take out the scarier parts of mythology and focus on really the heart of it. So, in the mythological tale, Theseus, he used a ball of string to find his way to the center of the maze, where he then banished the Minotaur. In this story, Zeus and the gang they use the lifeline from Poseidon's dive helmet as basically their ball of string to find their way to the center of the maze where they confront the Minotaur. And so it's kind of taking, you know, the greatest hits, the elements from mythological stories, and reimagining them in the pet center, except with these Olympian characters kind of figuring out and coming together to overcome these obstacles.
Were you an animal guy when you grew up?
Yeah, I mean, I had a hamster when I was a kid. His name wasn't Zeus. His name was Jeremiah Johnson. But yeah, I had you know, dogs and cats, and now I actually, you know, live on a farm, so I've got chickens, and my wife and I want to get, you know, other animals too. So yeah, we're very, very, very much animal lovers. I don't know if we could quite handle all the animals. I don't know if I'd want all the troll-make animals from the story that I've written, but yeah, definitely I'm big into animals, animal lover.
Was the Jeremiah Johnson the Robert Redford character? Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, that's him.
Very, very cool that name for a hamster.
I think my mom might have helped me name him.
well,
you know, the guys came up with that.
your illustrator, Andy Elkerton, he really brings these characters to life. So how does that, I know you don't live near each other at all, so how does that collaboration work between author and illustrator?
I mean, yeah, he's a real lifesaver because, you know, the way that this works is the animals will look at, say, a toilet or you know, the raw vacuum or a furnace, and they will see a monster. And that's kind of a hard concept to put forward in just the text of the story. So he does a great job bridging the gap, and he will draw the toilet that also then looks like this, you know, a giant sea monster. Or he'll take a ceiling fan and make it look like the Hydra, but you can also kind of tell it's still a ceiling fan. And honestly, he's has a lot of experience, so it's, you know, through my editor, we'll collaborate, and, you know, we'll kind of look at the whole story and decide that an illustration should go here, an illustration should go here, this is a great scene, this needs illustrated, and then, you know, just turn Andy loose, and then he comes up, he basically nails it, you know, we'll have a little bit of feedback at the end, maybe just like the way, you know, a character might look or it doesn't quite match, but yeah, he's just really good at bringing these scenes to life. Not only that, but also then in a way that kind of makes sense with this kind of complicated presentation of a pet store that's also ancient Greece.
I've got to think, for an author, you write these characters out, and you probably have an idea in your head of what they look like, and then you see the illustration. It must be something akin to when an author's book is made into a movie, a novel is made into a movie, and you see an actor playing that. So are these characters in your mind, are they still as you originally imagined them, or has Andy's drawings taken over that?
Oh, yeah, his drawings have taken over that. Yeah, you know, it's funny because you mentioned, like, whenever you have a favorite book and then you see it made into a movie, and maybe at first, you're like, oh, I don't. It's kind of like, you know, Robert Downey Jr. is Tony Stark. I can't imagine Tony Stark being any other actor at this point. And now that, you know, with Andy's illustrations, that's how all these characters now look in my mind. when I'm mapping out the future books or writing, I see his illustrations in my head, and it's actually, you know, it's pretty amazing.
Well, I know you set a pace for this book series every 6 months, and that's quite a pace. So I take it you must have some background in journalism and writing on deadline, right?
Wow, yeah, that's definitely right. Yeah, I started as a newspaper reporter, and then I worked in monthly magazine journalism and transitioned over to National Geographic and worked for their magazine, and then started writing books. So yeah, it's definitely, you know, I've been doing this for, gosh, almost 30 years. So yeah, I definitely have that kind of discipline pacing. You know, I don't really get writer's block, but, you know, procrastination is always the enemy of any writer, and I just know from experience that you can't procrastinate or you're in trouble. so yeah, that hitting that deadline, the deadline journalism would definitely train me for this kind of breakneck pace for this series.
And Nat Geo is getting more and more into these fiction books, which I think is just a brilliant idea. But how's the transition? I don't think you've written fiction before. So how's that transition been from nonfiction writing?
Yeah, you know, this is my first fiction series. I've written nonfiction before this, and mostly my other books for National Geographic are all, they're kind of taking like science facts or history or, you know, stuff about ninjas and pirates and sharks and making it fun for readers. So in a way, I've kind of, you know, absorbed a lot of information, and a lot of information also just kind of went into my head and fell out. But so I kind of absorbed all this information and also have a lot of experience making it more fun for younger readers. And I've been an avid reader since I was young, and I've always wanted to get into fiction writing. So yeah, it's definitely been a transition, but I feel like in some ways it's easier to go from nonfiction to fiction because it's kind of like, you know, although I still have to do research on Greek mythology, it's more about just putting together stories, and I can just, you know, kind of make up these stories and as I go, instead of having to diligently research every little thing. But in other ways, it's trickier because it's easy to kind of get lost in the weeds of writing, and then you realize I've just wasted 20 pages, and the animals haven't gone anywhere. You know, I haven't really presented the scenes. I'm just kind of telling the reader what's going on instead of actually just showing them. So fortunately, I've got an editor who National Geographic partnered me with, who's a very experienced children's fiction editor, and she's been super helpful. In the first book, you know, the later books I've written have gone through maybe 4 revisions, but the first book I think must have gone through 10 revisions, and it was a real kind of trial by fire, but it really helped me kind of hone in on tightening up the story and you know, what's useful and what's, you know, just whenever you're writing, you're kind of spinning your wheels and not going anywhere, and she really helped me, like, focus, and you know, this has been very educational for me, but it's also a heck of a lot of fun.
Did you come to these Greek mythology stories as an adult, or did you grow up with them?
No, definitely growing up. I mean, as a kid, it was more about, you know, the movies, like Jason the Argonaut, you know, the Harry Harrison kind of special effects with the, you know, the animated skeletons and things like that, or Clash of the Titans. And then, you know, and just from stuff that I learned in school and things. But now that I've come back to them as an adult, I realize, you know, how many, of course, liberties those movies took with it, but also just how much more rich of a well, how much source material there is, how many different heroes and gods and characters, and not just that, but also kind of the, I call them artifacts in my book, but, like, you know, there's, it's almost like Lord of the Rings. You know, there's invisibility helmets, and there's magical weapons, and there's indestructible cloaks and things that are all from mythology. It's like, it's just such a rich well of source material to pull stuff for a kid's series. And so then you throw in, like, you know, animals at a pet rescue center who all have these delusions that they're gods, and it's kind of a recipe for some zany fun.
And I know you have an expert looking over these books for accuracy, I guess. Is that kind of like a teacher grading your paper when you send these over to your Greek experts?
It's not quite. I mean, she doesn't really write. She doesn't break out the red pen and mark everything up. But she kind of keeps me within the guardrail, the rails of the source material. It's like, you know, at Disney World, they, I don't know if they still have it, but you drive these race cars. It's like this track where you drive race cars, and you can steer the vehicle so far left or right, but then there are these rails that keep you in the center, so you can actually spin out and you know, go on your own little rambling adventure. So that's what she does. She'll be like, this, you've entered a space here that has nothing to do with mythology or nothing to do with these characters. And then she'll offer suggestions, or she'll even offer, like, little, you know, there's other characters or monsters or things that you can add in here to kind of spice things up that are actually in line with this myth. So, yeah, she's been super helpful with that.
I'm always intrigued by Greek mythology when you look for accuracy in them, because these stories were passed down originally orally, and so they've kind of changed over the years. So is there a certain amount of liberty you can take and still be within the bounds?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, yeah, like you said, they weren't really written down till 750 BC or so, like, you know, in Homer's Odyssey. And certainly many other writers and movies have taken liberties. This being National Geographic, you know, we want to kind of still keep an educational bend and angle for these. And it's much, and each book, too, does have at the back of it, as a truth behind the fiction section where I break down, I then switch back to my old nonfiction mode, and I break down what the basis for each book is, what the actual myth was, and who the characters were. So, you know, even if I do take some liberties within the actual story, at the back of the book, readers can actually learn about the actual myth and what it meant to Greek people at the time, and to kind of rein everything back in and bring it back into focus.
Well, I think it's just a brilliant idea for a series, and I love the fact that Nat Geo's putting out these fiction books for kids. This one is called Zeus the Mighty, The Maze of the Menacing Minotaur. It's by Crispin Boyer. The book's available now wherever your fine books are sold. Crispin, just a pleasure talking to you, and enjoy it, and thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much. It was a pleasure to be on here.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.